Welcome to Spanish Janice. I'm Janice Burt, and today we're diving into conversations that inspire growth, connection, and confidence. You're watching Now Media Television.
Hello, and welcome everybody to Spanish Janice, the show where we dive into real conversations about growth and leadership and living with intention. I am your host, Janice Burt, and today I'm joined by Keith Sampson, the one, the amazing. He's an inspirational speaker, entrepreneur, father of three, and a creator of the Grow Through It mindset, which I love that. We're going to have to talk about that, Keith. In this first segment, we are going to be talking, though, first about discipline, you know, discipline. We want to talk about how that can become the foundation for confidence, for momentum in both business and life. So, Keith, welcome to Spanish Janice. It is so nice to have you here.
Oh, it's such a blessing to be able to be here. I'm very excited to do this with you.
Okay, so let's dive right into a topic that people maybe when they hear it are like, ugh, U-G-H, ugh. discipline, we need it in life.
Yep.
But so many times we shy away from it. Talk about it in your own life. Where did discipline first show up for you when you were younger? Like, what did that look like in your life?
So it's one of those things to where, well, it's interesting. It's one of those things you don't really think about until you really have to think about it. So as I was trying to come up with, where did I really start applying or learning like discipline? And the easiest, lowest hanging fruit one was I played sports in junior high and high school. So I would say that was the first that I can think of, like, of structured discipline. But the reality is I have ADD, ADHD, whatever you want to call it. And so I learned at a very young age to utilize discipline as a coping mechanism to where my ADD was not holding me back. And instead of, you know, over the next 40 years, instead of it being a weakness, the discipline allowed me to harness it as a superpower. And so I just had to naturally learn how to be disciplined in certain areas of my life. So that way I didn't feel like life was chaotic or I couldn't focus or get things done.
Ooh.
So yeah, very at a very young age.
So what did that look like in your life? Having discipline in certain areas? How did you structure that? What did that look like? Let's just take in the sports arena. What did discipline look like for you there?
Well, I would say both sports and then even in general life, what was interesting was it was other people that created that discipline first. So as a sports team, you know what time to show up. It's not like I'm coming up with the time to show up. No, practice starts at this time. The coach is putting together the drills, the conditioning, like all the things we did. Like, it was all being programmed by somebody else. And then even outside of sports, you know, in life, my parents fortunately created structure in our lives. So when we'd get home, we had time, let's say from school, right? You could hang out, play, but then there was a time to like get your homework done. And once that time started, you didn't get to go do anything else, watch TV, play video games, do whatever until the homework was done. Whereas if I'd had to create my own discipline and structure back then, probably been one of those kids that wouldn't have gotten homework done very often because I would have gotten into the play and into the fun. I would have never had the discipline to put that in place. So for me, you know, it was the discipline is created by others. I learned the value of having that discipline in my life to be able to self-manage my own life by seeing the results that discipline then created in those arenas.
So we're taught this, hopefully, at a younger age, right? By our parents, our teachers, people that are kind of in charge of us. But then, so take us now, we're adults, you're an adult now. Mm-hmm. How does that transfer, right? Because so many of us want to be consistent, and yet many times we're not, or we lack that discipline of consistency with the things that are for good for us physically, mentally, spiritually. How, when it's up to us and we're adults, how do we maintain consistency in our lives? How have you done that?
I would say it's really gotten, it's gotten to be more of a strength and something easier for me to do over the, even the last like 3 years. Like it kind of gradually gets better and better because we get to step back and kind of see the positive results of our lives when it's like, oh, well, duh, that worked. And yes, common sense says that should have worked. I just wasn't doing it. Right. And ironically enough, and this is a topic that I'm really diving into recently around the whole idea around emotional intelligence. And this one book, Emotional Intelligence 2.0, I think it was published back in 2014. So it's got some age to it, but there's three primary areas around social intelligence, and it's self-awareness, self-management, and social awareness. So when you think of discipline, that's a big part of like self-management. And like, as I've become, because like, you know, IQ is fixed, EQ is not. Same thing, I can go to the gym, work out, have that discipline, and I'm going to get stronger, better endurance. We can do the same thing with our EQ. So I think as I've been raising my EQ through consuming the right content, working on my body of work, thought leadership, being an entrepreneur, being a dad, all of those things, my self-management also started raising. And as my self-management started raising, it became easier to implement the discipline that I needed to then take it up another notch, and not cross into burnout, get higher results done, still maintain great relationships, and the discipline becomes part of who I am to do the things that I want to do.
Ooh, and I love this topic of EQ. I think it's underrated. I feel like a lot of time, don't you? I mean, talk a little bit about that. Like, how much more do we need EQ, even more than the IQ part of it? Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. And again, this is a topic that has me like completely like enthralled right now, to where it's, you know, we'll talk about the growth through it mindset piece of it, but this is like, it's interwoven, but I think I'm starting to have a little bit more focus on this because it is such an interesting topic. And to your point, and it's discussed in that same book that I just referenced, Emotional Intelligence 2.0, like we can continue to develop our EQ. We can get stronger in the EQ. And EQ is more important than IQ. And I cannot remember the exact statistics, but it's along the lines of when you look at like the high performers professionally, personally, they have a higher EQ in comparison to others than IQ in comparison to others. So you look at like, here's 1,000 top performers, and they might not be the IQ smartest in the room. However, their EQ is a lot higher. So I think it's like 70% or higher numbers than that, where EQ is more important than IQ when it comes to being a top performer in your field and in life. Versus you look at the bottom of the rung, and only 20% of the bottom of the rung have like low EQ. So whereas you can have bottom of the rung people with a high EQ, but very low EQ, and they're not getting stuff done in life, because you need that self-awareness and self-management to actually put into action some of the things you might be gifted with from an intelligence perspective.
Now, here is an IQ question that I do not know the answer to.
Oh, boy.
Why is it called EQ instead of EI?
So, because IQ is what? Intelligence quotient, I think. Quotient? Whatever it is. So it's emotional quotient. It's the exact same measurement, but instead of using the word intelligent, it's the word emotional.
Thank you for that, because I actually didn't know what IQ meant. And then, so that makes sense. I was like, why isn't it not EI, emotional intelligence? Come on, people. Make it easy for people like me.
Hey, I had to Google it. I wondered the exact same question. I just had to Google it and look it up as I'm like reading this book. I'm like, okay, these two things, why is it that way?
Ah, I'm so glad you did that, because now you're educating me. I love this. So when did you start becoming enthralled and fascinated with emotional intelligence and this EQ component?
Well, I think through different components in my life, and I can agree to what I'm going to say next to an extent, right? As especially a top performer, as somebody with a lot of drive in life, and somebody, yeah, with ADD, and there's other aspects that go along with that, I have been oftentimes labeled or said that I don't have like, I don't do well with emotional connection, right? Where I just don't know whether it was past relationships I now have some different thoughts on that. I don't think it was all just on my end, but as I've been studying this more and more and like really like look getting to know myself better, but hearing that and being somebody who goes, okay, if I have a weakness in emotional connection with others, with as much as I love people, love inspiring others, love working and interacting with people, how can I become stronger in an area that I'm weak? And that's really what started me down this path. And what I realized, and I'm going to do a shout out to one of my friends, Rachel Sheeran. We were having a conversation, and somebody that she had talked to or whatever used this analogy of in relationships when it comes to like EQ, you got to think of it as a house. And I love this. I shared this with my mentor, and he was like, he'd been doing counseling for like 30 some years. And he was like, this is great. I'm going to use it. So I'm going to share it. So think of like EQ as a house. And let's say two people that are in a relationship, friendship, even like co-working or whatever. Let's say you enter that house and you're both on that first floor. Well, guess what? Janice, if we're on the first floor of this house and we're working together and we're having conversation, it's pretty easy to talk and dialogue. But let's say I work on myself. I continue to chase to be the better version of me. I'm challenging my inputs. I'm growing. And especially as you grow, and again, when you understand the three components of EQ are self-awareness, self-management, and social awareness. So if I do the work to improve on those three and you stay where you're at, I'm going to move up to that second floor of the house. I might even eventually move up to that third floor of the house. And some people, when they come into that, they might not do the work. So just like muscles, EQ can go down as well as go up. So if people literally are doing the opposite, somebody might end up in the basement. Now, how difficult is that for us to connect and have a conversation and work together and coexist if we're in different levels of the house and we're trying to communicate with each other? Right? It's not nearly like when you're in that first level and you're communicating. As you get separation on the EQ side of things, now all of a sudden you have separation and connection. And I never thought of it in that way until Rachel said, oh, it's like in a house. And it just, for some reason, I pictured it in my head and have just kind of gone off the ropes with that idea and like kind of formulated what I just went through and the whole communication and the explanation on that. And so now it's sitting there going, it's like, it makes so much sense when you lay it out like that.
It makes so much sense. And to have a visual of that, because we obviously know in relationships, people grow apart. Some people outgrow, the vibration is different, whatever you want to call it. But to have that visual of a house is absolutely brilliant. Everybody stay with us. We are going to come back and talk about the grow through it mindset.
We'll be right back with more insight, inspiration, and real conversations. This is Spanish Janice on Now Media Television. And we're back. I'm Janice Burt, and you're watching Spanish Janice. Let's keep growing together.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Spanish Janice. You want more of what you're watching? Then stay connected to Spanish Janice and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime you like. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and Spanish. That is so cool. If you're on the move, you can get podcasts right from our website. And we have everything from business to news to fashion, culture. Now Media TV is ready when you are. And welcome back to Spanish Janice. I am here with Keith Sampson, the one and only. And we're going to talk about this grow through it mindset. I love many words in that in that title. So Keith, tell us a little bit about this grow through it mindset.
Well, first I will say what it's not, okay? It's not growth mindset. And many people are like, what's the difference? And I will go ahead and preface that it's not that before I talk about what it is, and then people will understand why it's not just growth mindset. I used to bucket myself, oh yeah, I'm a speaker on growth mindset, until I had the courage to step away and really embrace my own body of work and give it its own label. So the grow through it mindset is derived from a single choice that I made when I was 19 years old. And it was done in the face of tragedy, right? So my at the age of 19, my dad was diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS. when I was a sophomore at college. I was like 650 miles away from home. So that was in January of 1997. I traveled home that March to see my dad and my family for the first time since his diagnosis. And my cousin Ray pulled me off to the side, who he was kind of a mentor of mine through high school and stuff. And he's like, you know, Keith, you have a choice to make. And what you decide, neither one is wrong, but what you decide will determine everything. Are you going to choose to grow through this, or are you going to choose to go through it? And I chose to grow through that situation with my dad and his illness and his eventual death. And that single choice changed my life. It changed my life personally. I applied it to my profession. I didn't realize I was doing back then by actively choosing to grow through life instead of go through life. It created a difference in a mindset of how I approached every single day. Now, it's not like I was 19 and said, I'm going to choose to grow through this. And, oh, I now have this mindset that I can teach others. And 20 some years from now, there'll be a book coming out about it. No, no, no. This was 20 some years of like development. And I hit a certain point where I could look backwards and see that choice to grow through it and then applying that to other areas of my life is what allowed me to create and essentially do these five key things that is now part of that framework that I can teach others. And really, it comes down to that choice, you know, and when people choose to grow through their life, apply these five key fundamentals, they start moving into a place of maximizing their own potential. And I know you talk a lot about like even fitness and wellness and everything. And that was a concept of when I started doing CrossFit and the whole idea of that we all have our own DNA capabilities. You know, I'm 5'6". I am never going to dunk a basketball on a regular 10-foot hoop. I got to lower that thing, right, to do it. So my DNA is going to limit me there. However, when you look at your professional and personal development DNA, that isn't locked in. We can enhance that. We can develop that. And that's where doing this work allows us to really move into these opportunities to maximize who we can be.
Okay. I love all of that. And one thing, we're going to talk more about the specifics of that because I really want to know. But one thing that stood out to me is the fact that your cousin came to you and actually had that conversation with you and asked mm-hmm. you that question. To me, that is huge. I mean, and talk about huge. Self-awareness and wanting to help and mentor someone else. What do you know where he was coming from, what his experience of life had been up until that point, to be able to ask you such a solid, like deep, very thoughtful question like that?
I don't. And, you know, shame on me for not having thought of that and like hunting him down and being like, all right, Ray, why did you ask me that question? So now I'm going to have to go do that. So, you know, I don't know what led to that, except that, you know, he was a cousin, but he was an older cousin. I kind of joke around about that, you know, like, and he was more of a mentor and he led, he was a leader in his church. And I think he had a certain mentality towards life that opened him up to try to challenge individuals in very soft ways to how they're going to experience things. I don't know why he asked that specific question. You know, it didn't get asked by my other two brothers. They didn't have the relationship with him that I had. But, you know, it was a life-changing question. And I talk about that a little bit in the book and in my talk, that we have these moments in life, these watershed moments, where we only get a handful of them, but our life will either end up in one direction or another based on that moment. And they usually involve a crazy moment in life, a person, and a choice. There's three components that critically create that watershed moment. And for me, yeah. It was the illness of my dad was the event. He was the person. And then the choice was either growing through it or going through it.
And it's just such an encouragement to also be that voice for other people, for those people that have that mindset of being able to go, okay, life is happening either to me or for me. Am I going to grow through it or go through it? But just to have that mindset and then to be able to impart that to somebody else in the form of a question. Oh my gosh, that just stood out to me as being remarkable and also good on you for taking that question and going like, okay, I do want to grow through this. So tell us what's part of that framework of the grow through it mindset?
So there's like I said, five key characteristics, and all five were developed during or after that journey with my dad. Okay. And so the first two were pretty quick into it. The first one is being a continuous learner. So somebody's in that grow through it mindset framework. They want to grow through life. They enter this place of being a continuous learner. So when my dad got diagnosed with this disease, I knew I had limited time. And I was like, what am I going to learn from him? How is this going to be used to help make me a better person? How can I use this to help others in the future, to your point, to be somebody that I can identify? There's going to be other people that lose their parents, specifically their father. How can I use this to make their lives better? And one of the things that happened when I entered that space while my dad was ill, like true growth learning like that, and anger can't coexist. So, you know, we weren't happy my dad was sick, but there was no anger with it. You know, there was no blame. There was no bitterness, because I'm learning through that process as well. The second characteristic is rooted in gratitude. And I became grateful for every moment I had with my dad, every phone call, anything and everything that I can capture with him. It's just became immensely grateful. And I'll never forget the last physical walk that we took together. And, you know, I look back at that with this just immense gratitude for the opportunity that we had to do it. And I can pinpoint the very last time we took steps together. Like, that's huge. Other people might think that's incredibly sad. I look at that as this treasured moment that I get to hold on to for the rest of my life. The third one is ridiculous resiliency. And it used to be just resiliency. And then I kind of added the ridiculous to the front of it, because what I realized was I didn't want my definition of resiliency to be categorized or used with somebody else's. Because most people define resiliency as the ability to get knocked down, get back up, hold your ground, you know, take a knee, keep going, right? Ridiculous resiliency in my mind is when you add a level of proactivity to it, where you recognize that I am going to go through hard things. So I'm going to do the work that something might knock somebody else down, but it's not going to knock me down. I'll take the hit, but I'll keep on going, because I did that work. And then there's an addition layering of it with purpose and passion and Angela Duckworth's definition of grit. You know, all those things start to kind of like interweave into this idea of ridiculous resiliency. The fourth one is playing the long game. And playing the long game, essentially, if you were to sit there and take your life and lay it out like a timeline, and you can look at, hey, I was like, for myself, born in 1977, I plan on living to be like 90. Okay, so I'm halfway on this journey called life. Then all of a sudden you go, oh, I entered my professional world here. I still have all of this time ahead of me. And you start laying things out in a way to where these moments, both good and bad, just become blips on that timeline. And they carry less weight in the moment. And it allows us to very much live in the moment, but also look ahead and go, I've got so much time ahead of me. You know, unless something happens like my dad, he was taken at the age of 51. His timeline was much more abruptly ended. But the reality is, I live every day as if it's my last, in good ways, not crazy ways. But I very much expect to live another 45 years. So how am I doing both simultaneously? It's because I understand how to play the long game. And then the fifth one is understanding the power of influence. And it's a two-sided coin. It's I have the ability to influence others, but also others influence me. And how do I utilize that power of influence to help become a better version of me, and in turn help others also do the exact same thing? How am I helping people grow and using that influence in life?
Oh, I love that framework. So good. Now we have to take a short break. And when we come back, everybody stay tuned, because we are going to ask Keith all about that tattoo on his forearm. Stay with us, everybody.
We'll be right back with more insight, inspiration, and real conversations. This is Spanish Janice on Now Media Television. And we're back. I'm Janice Burt, and you're watching Spanish Janice. Let's keep growing together.
Welcome back, mis amigos, to Spanish Janice. We are continuing our awesome conversation with Keith Sampson, and he is going to tell us all about that amazing tattoo that I keep spying on his forearm. Keith, tell us all about that. What does it say and what does it mean?
So it says, change the world in a typewriter font. So for years, I had a bracelet in the same font that I wear from Mudlove has changed the world. And that is my why. And, you know, the whole Simon Sinek, start with why and understand, like, why do I do what I do? Basically yielded this. However, most people, I would say that, hey, I'm going to change the world. They're still trying to play through business. And so if I can tell a quick story, when I was working at Wildman Uniform and Linen, I was the sales managers back in like 2003, 2004-ish. And it was a company that did a lot of great things with the money that it made as a business. And the owners, Brent and Karen Wildman, they weren't ones to like pat themselves on the back or anything about what they did with the profits from the business. But as we doubled the size of the company and had this like celebratory meeting with the leadership, we sat in the room and Karen got up and basically said, hey, as leaders, it's important for you guys to know the lives that are being impacted around the world because of the money you're helping the company make. And she started going through stories, right? And so again, this is early 2000s. I would like to say that things are definitely different in Romania. But in Romania at the time, they were sponsoring and helping fund an orphanage. And through that orphanage, they heard of the tragedy that was happening in some of the area hospitals. So back in the early 2000s, Romania was run by a different ruling party. But obviously in Romania, healthcare is different, adoption, all of those things are way different. And so what was happening was pregnant moms could walk into a hospital, give birth to a baby, and just leave the baby and walk out and abandon the baby. And so through this orphanage, they found out that these hospitals, especially one in that region, didn't have the funds to take care of these abandoned babies. So what the hospital was doing was on Friday, they were taking these abandoned babies, wheeling them into an abandoned wing of the hospital and closing the doors. Monday morning, they would open up the doors and the babies that were still alive, they would wheel back in and take care of. And the ones that had passed, they would dispose of. And this had happened week after week after week. You know, the kids would get old enough. It was like step and repeat. They'd eventually go to an orphanage, but new babies are being born. And this is just how they were managing these abandoned babies. And just like the expression on your face, when you hear that story, it's not like you can do nothing or it's just, I mean, it's horrific. Well, when Brent and Karen Wildman heard about this, the same thing. They're like, okay, we can't not do anything. So the company started funding nurses and supplies and everything needed and food to take care of these abandoned babies in that abandoned wing in the hospital over the weekends. And as she's telling me this story or telling the room this story, I remember sitting there in my chair and I remember looking down at the brown carpet and like this yellow car on the wall. And I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm not selling uniforms and mats and linens. I'm saving lives. And that was the first time I ever truly felt like I always felt good about working there because I knew that good things were happening, but specifically that I was not going to work for just a paycheck. And that moment there, I felt I've tied in purpose to all my businesses because of it. It's something I teach. I try to help other businesses do the same thing because I truly believe, and that goes back to my why, to change the world through business, that business is the greatest untapped vertical for personal purpose and fulfillment. We spend more time working than we do anything else. And if we can go to work every single day when our feet hit the ground and we're going for a purpose and not just a paycheck, that is truly life-changing. That trickles into somebody's personal life. It trickles into the quality of work they do. It can improve companies. It can improve culture. I mean, it is truly an opportunity to change the world through business. And ever since that moment, that became my unknown and eventually very much developed calling and purpose in life and eventually tattooed it on my arm.
Woo! Oh my goodness. That is so amazing. And this concept of purpose and finding your why, I know is so key, like fundamentally just key in life. And I also know that there are a lot of people, and myself included, earlier on in my life where I was like, what is my purpose? Like, please God, what's my purpose? I just want to know. Mm-hmm. For people that are in that place of wanting to discover their why, how do they do that? What are some steps that they can do to really find out what their purpose is?
Well, I mean, I think part of it is finding that reason to get off the couch. Right. And everybody, I think sometimes people put too much pressure on themselves to find, you know, their purpose instead of letting some of it happen organically. You know, my purpose to change the world through business didn't automatically set out when I walked out of that room from that meeting. What was the immediate takeaway was my work had purpose. I was going to work for more than just a paycheck. Where my why developed out of that over time was this strong, innate internal desire for others to feel the exact same way I felt going to work every day. And then the realization that it's possible for any business to offer that to their employees. They just choose to have to do it. And so then that, like the education, the inspiration, the challenge of working with businesses to do that, that actually developed into my true why, to change the world through business, whether it's on stage, working as a consultant in the room, you know, or mentoring. Like I have the ability to help businesses adopt this option, this opportunity to help people move into their best versions of themselves and find purpose through work at the same time. So now, for somebody who's trying to find it, start doing some of the things that you love and then just let's see where the passion yields and eventually develops into the purpose.
What do you feel about these two phrases, that your mess will become your message and that your pain will become your purpose? Do you agree with that sentiment? What do you think about those two statements?
I think that those things can be true. I don't think that they're a hard truth, personally, just off the cuff, right? Because not everybody, like my message to, you know, help people grow through their life instead of go through it, I can't look back and say that experience was messy. You know, it didn't start as a mess. Some people's lives and stories might start as a mess, and then it becomes as they clean up and they find who they are and everything else, it can very much become a message. But not everybody's message starts as a mess, I guess, is the way to kind of like unpack that one. The pain becoming purpose, I didn't feel any pain except the story of that, right? It's not like I went through, it's not like my arm got caught in between boulders and I had to saw it off like that one guy did. You know what I mean? Like, and now that has become his purpose. He has a message behind that, and the resiliency and everything he speaks about and inspires others came from that type of pain. Because the reality in life, we are all going to experience pain, and pain at different levels and pain on different reasons. And not all that pain will yield purpose. And sometimes it can go backwards. I have specifically put myself in the middle of hard things, things that I know, like even the training for these things cause me pain because I know it's making me a better version of myself. So the purpose has actually led to what some people would go, you're crazy, you know, but it's led to pain and growth in the process.
Talk about some of those hard things that you do. What I know you do some pretty intense physical challenges. Tell everybody what those are.
So I didn't realize it, but I was over the last couple of years becoming an endurance athlete and started to really fall in love with pushing my boundaries. And I mean, I wasn't even a runner. I mean, I just turned 48. I ran my first half marathon in May of 2022. So, you know, I mean, we're just talking like 3.5 years ago, I ran my first half marathon. This last year, I ran my first 50-mile ultra, and that was training for the hardest thing I've ever done, called like 29029 Everesting Challenge. So on that one, you have 36 hours to climb the equivalent height of Mount Everest. And so I did that in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, at a 40-degree grade average mountain. And so you climb, gondola down, climb, gondola down, over and over again. I do it 19 times. And so when you talk about earlier discipline, mindset, and everything else, the people that organize 29 or 29, they do it a bunch of different mountains. They said that Jackson Hole is the hardest, not because it's the steepest, which makes it the shortest like climb, but it is incredibly hard being that steep, but because it's 19 ascensions. That gives you 19 different times to quit. That gives you 18 different times to waste time on the gondola ride down times 5 to 6 minutes. If you waste that time, there's 2 hours gone. If you stop at the aid station number one 19 times, let's say 3 minutes too long, there goes another hour gone. So you have to be like mentally, and it wasn't just physically hard. I was timing everything, pacing everything for 19 ascensions, and I got it done in just under 32 hours. So, I mean, it's, you know, it took me 7 months to train for it, but you're in and dialed in the entire time to make sure that you don't fall victim to the clock. And what's great about that event is you're fighting the mountain, you're fighting yourself, and you're fighting time. Like, there is no race. You're not racing other people. It's you against the mountain, you against the time.
Okay.
And you against you.
You against you. That's very well stated. I know that fight, that war very well. Okay, 32 hours. Did you ever sleep? Like, no.
Yeah, so I went 18 hours straight after my 13th ascension. It was just after midnight. Went back to the hotel, took a shower, tried to lay down. I call it, I rested for like 3 hours because you hydrate so much. I was up every 45 minutes to pee, right? So you just don't sleep well. And then got up after, you know, being there like 4 hours total, got dressed, went and got breakfast, was back on the mountain and was climbing the mountain as the sun came up. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, it was 4 hours of like some heavy rest, let's call it that. And then cranked out the last six ascensions the rest of that day. So it started Friday morning at 6 a.m. and goes till 6 p.m. Saturday evening. So when the clock hits zero, the clock hits zero.
Let's go. I am so inspired by stories like that. I actually get chills and goosebumps. Stay with us, everybody. We will be right back with some more Keith.
We'll be right back with more insight, inspiration, and real conversations. This is Spanish Janice on Now Media Television. And we're back. I'm Janice Burt, and you're watching Spanish Janice. Let's keep growing together.
Welcome back, friends, to Spanish Janice. Don't miss a second of this show or any of your Now Media TV favorites, streaming live and on demand wherever and whenever you want. Grab the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and enjoy instant access to our lineup of bilingual programs. If you prefer podcasts, you can listen anytime on the Now Media TV website at www.nowmedia.tv. We cover business and news and lifestyle. The stories that you care about are always within reach. Welcome back to Spanish Janice. And we are joined once again by Keith Sampson. And Keith, you have been such a lovely, insightful guest. Seriously, I know people are going to want to connect with you. So where can they go and find you?
Easiest place is iamkeithsampson.com. It's kind of like my website for speaking and thought leadership. But Instagram, I am Keith Sampson, LinkedIn, also two great, wonderful places to connect.
So good. And find him. I mean, obviously, we have frameworks, we have EQ, we have all of this stuff very well thought out, not only very well thought out, but very well applied, which I would say is one of the most challenging things to do in life. A lot of things are simple, but not necessarily easy when we go to apply them. So Keith definitely applies all of that. And I want to talk a little bit about fear and about discomfort. Okay. I have a podcast called One Fear Per Year, because in my own life, I realized that fear had been paralyzing me and I wanted to face it head on. So every year I've made a vow to do something that pulls me completely out of my comfort zone and brings up all that discomfort and feelings of fear of rejection, failure, you know, judgment, all of that good stuff. I know you are a huge proponent of walking through fear and of actually seeking discomfort so that you can grow. So tell us a little bit about how that journey started and how that journey is going currently.
Okay. So long story short, in 2020, I started picking a word for the year and they stack on top of each other. So fast forward, it was the end of 2023. And I was at a speaking boot camp and masterclass and had the absolute pleasure to meet Sterling Hawkins, who I'd heard on a podcast. He's the author of Hunting Discomfort, and I wanted to consume his book. And at that point, I think I said 24 books for the year that year. And he goes, dude, you read mine. I'm like, I will. It's on my list. And I was like, you know what? I'll get it done before the end of the year. And so I did. And it absolutely rocked me, and I made discomfort my word for the year in 2024. And he has a great line from that book: on the other side of discomfort is not only growth, but life's greatest experiences. And it is so incredibly true. So 2024, I pushed myself to the limits, and then, and in some ways beyond, chasing and hunting that discomfort and the growth that comes through it and the memories and the experiences. I ran my first marathon. I started the Warsaw Growth Summit. I really started like pushing myself into other areas through that. Now, one of the things that would happen, though, after the Warsaw Growth Summit that November of 24, I crossed into burnout for the first time ever in my life. So I, in some ways, I found my limits, at least that I had at that point. So my word for 2025 was recovery. And recovery is both proactive and reactive. So how, discomfort doesn't go away. You know what I mean? Like it's still the word. Recovery is now stacked on top of it. So how do I keep performing at a high level? How do I keep delivering this? How do I keep being a dad to three amazing kids and doing all of these things, but not cross into burnout? I had to add in recovery, both proactive and reactive. And so this year I did even more physical stuff. Another year of the Warsaw Growth Summit, you know, and in reality, I look at like, I wrote a book, you know, 70,000 words written in, you know, between the middle summer to the end of October, or yeah, end of October. And so I actually did more in 2025 than I did in 2024. No burnout. You know, so the idea of like, you know, in your whole point of like facing your fears, once you get to a certain point, you start learning some of the skills and tools to push yourself further and further. It's not scary. And you can make incredible memories and have incredible experiences, and you don't kill yourself in the process.
That is so key and so important, is to to me, it's to find that balance. And like, I have that tattoo, just like you have a tattoo that says balance, in that same regard, to make recovery and rest and rejuvenation, just as important as the hustle and the like going for the thing and walking through fear and all of that. So if somebody is just at that place of extremes, let's say, and you could be extreme on either way, right? Too much recovery, like we're just binge watching Friends, you know, with potato chips kind of deal, or like way here, hustle culture, not taking a second to breathe. What is your advice to them? Something that they can do right now to kind of bring that right into this happy middle ground spot?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked that. Something, value your mornings more than your evenings. When we wake up in the morning, our minds are more sharp, we are more creative, we are more clear-headed, we don't have distractions. And if you build in a discipline, your time to do certain things first thing in the morning, that will trickle to all other aspects of your life. And I started doing that that last October. And because I was feeling that I was going into the burnout, and had some stuff happen that was like, okay, how did I end up here? And so now my morning, my healthy drink, I sit down in my chair, I read 1 to 5 chapters of the Bible, I physically get on my knees and pray, and then I do a max rep of push-ups. Sometimes I'll do that in a terminal in an airport. If I have to get up early, drive to an airport, and then I check in, I'm sitting there. But I haven't missed a single day of that routine since October 28th of last year. And that 5, 10, 15, sometimes it's 30 minutes. Absolute game changer. And anybody can do that. Anybody can make the choice to value their mornings more than their evenings and start putting together a fundamental discipline time for yourself in the mornings. Game changer.
I really love that. That's an encouragement for me, just so you know. I can tend to be a little on the lackadaisical side in the mornings if I don't have anything scheduled going on. And there is something.
It's easy.
Yeah. It's just a mindset, and it's having that, like, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to sit here. I've heard too, a lot of times what's helpful for things like that is to have a certain space, a certain area that is like your little area to meditate, to pray, to do your push-ups, things like that. Yep. Do you have a space like that in your house that you go to?
Yeah, I mean, in my bedroom, I've got my chair with my little table and a lamp that has my Bible. Like, so that's where I do the reading, the prayer, hit the floor and do the push-ups. However, I travel a lot, so I have to be able to do it in hotels. When I was hiking through the Andes Mountains to Machu Picchu, I packed an iPad and did it with my iPad on the sides of the mountain. And but again, when it becomes your discipline, it's, I wake up no matter where I'm at, and this is what I do before I, quote, start my day. And that's kind of really around that idea. And then you can expand it. Like one of the things I'm doing, I'm closing in on, I've just under 400 pushups left to hit 50,000 for the year. So I'll have that done by December 31st. So I'm going to keep going with that next year, but I want to add pull-ups to it. Guess what? I probably can't do pull-ups every day because it's kind of hard to find in an airport or whatever, but on a bigger picture, it's still working in those disciplines. Or am I going to, I've got a rower at home. Is that going to become part of my morning discipline where I'm going to row 5,000 meters, take me less than 25 minutes? Once you start with that discipline and it becomes part of you, and you can add to it a little bit, and it goes into all areas of your life.
It's so good. And everybody's so individual. So people who are watching or listening to this, just know that you can customize that. I know I will do that. Like, this has really inspired me to just make my mornings count, and not in a crazy aggressive sort of overwhelming way, but like you said, 5, 10 minutes, 15 minutes of stretches, meditation, prayer, reading something that's just life fulfilling is so huge. Keith, before I let you go, we totally let him go. We were so close to finishing too.
If he pops back in, you can just take it from that rest.
Yeah. Dang.
It's not even bad weather out today. What's going on
today? It could be him too. When we get it back up, I'll just say, so Keith, before I let you go, it'll just be like we could pop that back in there, but dang, we were so damn close. I was literally just going to ask one last question.
Are you there?
Oh, there you are.
Hold on. Yeah. I can watch you start breaking up and I'm like, no, I couldn't hear what you're saying.
We did the same thing.
You're talking about how you were being inspired and stuff.
Yeah. This video call is being recorded. Okay.
Yeah, we're still recording, so if you want to take it from...
I have a message here on the thing.
There, you just got much more clearer.
Oh, really? Yeah, something's up with the internet connection.
Yeah, that's why, for this room, I'm hardwired to fiber.
It's probably not you then. It's probably us over here, but let's see if it comes back. Now he's gone again. Yeah. You're choppy.
You're off and on.
Oh, there you are. Yeah.
Okay. Well, he's back now.
What do we need to do to finish it up so you can edit it in?
Yeah, totally. I'm just going to say, okay, Keith, I have one last question for you because we're literally almost done.
Okay.
And then we'll try to get it. Hopefully this will carry us through. We're so close. Oh my gosh. Okay. Let's try this and see if we can get it. Ready?
Yeah.
All right, Keith, I have one last question for you. I know you mentioned Machu Picchu. You've mentioned Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and that you did. Are there any other cool adventures where there was some discomfort involved that you can tell us about just to wrap up this segment? I always love hearing about people's adventures.
Yeah. So, I mean, those were the two biggest ones, and where 29-29 is physically and mentally, the hike through the Andes Mountains was emotional and spiritual. So this was a huge area of growth. I would say they don't really get much more physically discomforting than that. But, you know, the mental discomfort and facing our fears is another one of the big ones. And so, like, even with doing a second year of the Warsaw Growth Summit, that was another big choice to make. And, like, do we do year two? It's not cheap to do, and I financially underwrite it. The time and energy that goes into it, it definitely takes it into discomfort. But I will tell you that the results coming at it, the stories that I've already heard, worth all the work. And, you know, as we wrap this up, that's one of the things I would love to hopefully leave as an encouragement for your audience, is that the work we do is worth it, right? The work we do, especially when we're focused on impacting and improving the lives of others, we may never, ever know the exact effects, but just know it. Effect. You don't know how those, like my cousin, when he asked me that question, are you going to grow through this or go through this? He had no idea that it would lead to us being on this show right now. And who knows who's listening to it, hearing potentially that exactly how they need to be. And so much of that, I had to cross through discomfort to be in the place to do this. So it's not just physical, it is those mental things.
Thank you, Keith, for just showing up in life in that way as a grow through it person, as a positive person, as someone who's willing to put in the work, but also have that self-awareness to know when you're burning out and when something needs to change, to put that recovery in there. So many nuggets of wisdom and of gold in this interview. So everybody, go out into the world and be that change that you wish to see in the world. Work on your own personal development, your own growth journey, and let's do it together. We are here to do this thing called life together. Thanks again, Keith. Everybody have an amazing day.